Welcome to NCBA's Cattleman's Call podcast with host Lane Nordland.
Hey friends, welcome back to the Cattleman's Call podcast. Lane Nordland with you here today, and winter is finally starting to come up here in the Northern Plains just a little bit. We had frost out on the ground this morning. In Montana, it's been a pretty open winter, which is okay when you're feeding cows, but we'll cross our finger we get some snowpack and some moisture here in the next few weeks and months. Of course, the holidays are upon us. Folks are busy making plans, wondering what they're going to be cooking, of course, in my household, and hopefully all of your households, you'll be serving beef this holiday season. And today, we're going to be joined by our friends in Fort Worth, Texas, with the Meat Board store. You may have heard about the Meat Board there in the Stockyards District, and of course, watched a segment last spring on NCBA's Cattleman to Cattleman. But today, we're joined by Don Ray and Greg Kimmel of the Meat Board. Gentlemen, how are things going here as we make our way through December? It's hard to believe the new year's just upon us.
Well, it's really starting to get busy here. I know my partner Greg is just busier than everything, getting ready for shipping Christmas boxes out. We've already got fortunate enough to get our pre-orders done, so we're ready to start processing product to go into those boxes, and also to take care of the customers that are coming in now to get ready for their Christmas dinners and New Year's dinners and that type of stuff. So it's a busy time of the year for us, big time.
Now, with the Meat Board, gentlemen, obviously you're not only a meat shop, but you're also a lunch stop as well for folks as well. I think it's such a great model, a little different for maybe me up here in the middle of Montana. I think Merle Haggard sang a song about that one time. But let's talk about the Meat Board, and Don, maybe your background in livestock production too, and how really it came about.
Okay, well, you know, I'm a degreed A&M guy with an animal science background, and I've owned a ranch for 40 years, and run mostly Black Angus cattle. And over the years, we had processing plants all over the U.S., cutting product for different people in the industry, contracts with Outback Steakhouses, and made cooked product for the pizza industry and soups and sauce industry. And then later, several years ago, I decided to retire, and we sold our business out. I retired, and then after about a month of that, my wife said, "You need a real job again." So we started thinking about a friend of mine and a partner, Dr. Nick Nicholson, to come up with an idea. And we thought, "Well, let's just do a butcher shop." And and I call it a high end butcher shop, but my wife says, "Don't say that." And I said, "Well, it is. It really is." But because it's you walk in and it's stainless equipment and a cutting room, and looks like a butcher shop. You can walk up to the counter and pick something out of the counter, or behind it is a cutting room with two windows and a butcher's there to cut any size, shape, or form you want. And so we opened this butcher shop in January of 2020, which was not a great planning. We were about to launch a huge marketing thing in March, April, and May, and June of 2020, and COVID hits. And so we were just kind of standing there looking out the window, wondering where people are, you know. But it was, we survived that. It wasn't pretty. And then 21 was a little better. And then 22 got better. And 23, it's really starting to kind of jive like we thought back when we opened it. But It was set up to be a local butcher shop in Fort Worth, but we handle prime and upper two-thirds product, aged, and so we're very selective on the red meat side of it, and we handle beef, veal, and pork that we source, and lamb out of Texas, and we're real selective because we're not a huge complex. It's probably 2,500 square feet. And it was a restaurant that didn't make it. So we took and remodeled it and decided to make it a butcher shop. And we did two things with that space. One is we inherited a kitchen. So we decided to make sandwiches 100% out of the product we have in the store. And then we put a conference room, you might say, and we call it the boardroom, where you can have private meetings and parties and lectures, and we do a lot of teaching in that room, how to trim a brisket and how to make a charcuterie board and all that. But so we got rolling, and it's starting to pick up some momentum. We then spread out our selection to more sausage products, bacon, sourced bacon. That all this is done by people that I've known for 50 years, plants in Texas and the surrounding areas that I've either been in their plants over the years or they've been in the plants that I was running over the years. So we had a really good relationship, and we were very selective. And so, as I mentioned, we branch out and we're handling, you know, bacon wrapped quail and on and on and on. So to give a little bit more variety, and with the kitchen, we were able then to branch out and do some what we call grab and goes, which we make a macaroni and cheese and a twice baked potato and a sauteed asparagus. So they can basically come in and pick up dinner, a couple of steaks of their choice, a side dish, and even a bottle of wine if they want to, and walk out the door. So it seems to, as we go along with it, we've expanded into dessert areas and having pre-made homemade pecan pie, small ones, and cookies that we're having done by a baker that's soon to be part of our group. And so anyway, it just kind of opened up the selection to bring it more of where you can walk in and pick up everything you need to go home. So
as you mentioned, you're working with a lot of the processing facilities and feedlots there in Texas. So a majority of your beef is probably home-raised right there in the Lone Star State. Am I correct in that assumption, Don?
You're partially correct. We source our beef out of a packer out of Kansas.
Okay.
That's certified Angus program, and most of those, if not quite a few of those cattle, are fed in Texas and part of Texas. And I've even ran some of my own Angus cattle through our operation. We're sourcing out with other ranchers now that have the quality that we want, that want to do a rancher program to keep out of Texas or in the Texas area to really support that area, if that makes sense. So
you're working with ranchers. So if a consumer wants to buy Texas specific beef, and maybe they want to know where that food, where that beef came from, is that kind of the thing to connect those ranchers out in the countryside with those consumers, so they know where that prime rib's coming from? Is that kind of the goal?
Yes, sir. It is. In fact, we've reached out to and been reached by ranchers wanting to see if we could showcase their beef. And we're starting that program after the first of the year and showcase a rancher a month or rancher every quarter. We're just kind of work through that. And it is definitely their cattle being processed and brought into the shop to be cut into to Texas raised beef. So
what do you hope the consumer reaction to that will be?
Well, you know, that's a great question. And the consumer we're seeing over the years, and it's one of the reasons why we thought about doing this butcher shop, is they wanted to know, you know, kind of where's this meat coming from? You know, how is it, not so much how is it raised, but, you know, is it grass fed or grain fed or whatever? But they wanted to know where it was coming from. And being in Texas, in Cowtown, you know, it has a ring if it's Texas beef. But and most of it is. I can't say that all of it is, because, like I say, we source from a packer. But anyway, it seems to have the right trend going, and the rancher is really getting excited. We've worked pretty closely with the Texas and Southwest Cattle Raisers Association, and we were written up in their magazine one time, and so it kind of helped us get our feet in the door, that we kind of have that niche, if you will. And that's, we're just trying to go forward with that. 2024 is going to be a big year, or a year we're looking forward to really building some relationships with local ranchers.
Now, Greg Kimmel is also joining us here, and Greg, let's talk about your involvement with the meat board and why you want to be a part of it.
Yeah, so I was actually a customer long before I came on board. I really enjoy there's a lot of education that goes on all day long in that shop, and that's what I enjoyed. We have some young butchers that are meat science degree kids, very knowledgeable. And what I've noticed is there's really probably COVID set it off, where people are very, very curious now where all their products are coming from. And to have someone standing at the meat counter that could answer that question factually is very important to me and to Don as well.
So when you're looking at that, obviously you talk about having some young kids in the meat science background, there obviously is always labor challenges and trying to find folks to come and work and those that have a passion for being a butcher, creating these cuts of beef and other meats for consumers. So I guess for both of you, what are some of the challenges that you face in a storefront type business? Especially, there's nothing more American than having a butcher shop on Main Street. But I guess, what are some of the challenges that you are seeing and working through, and what are some of those opportunities that you're finding through these challenges?
Well, that's, again, another interesting question. We're fortunate to have the education. That was what we were after, not just being a meat shop. There were people walk in and want to know, tell me about the beef you're trying to sell here and where it comes from and that type of thing. And so we can handle all that. We've expanded the knowledge with our help with the people that we have there to also, when a lady walks in, and says, I want to buy that ribeye, but how do I cook it? You know, or that tri-tip, how do I cook that? Or how does my husband cook this brisket? Then we can tell them more than they want to know about how to do that. And that was lacking, what I saw out in the retail side, in grocery stores, where I would listen to a butcher or a meat person tell a lady what to do with a piece of meat. And it wasn't that they didn't know, but they just didn't have the knowledge to go all the way through it. And we wanted to not only tell them about the meat product, but also how to prepare it. And that seems to then, ironically, we have a lot of ladies that come in and shop. It's not just a guy's place to go buy a brisket and smoke it. And there are times we'll look up and there'll be four or five ladies in there shopping and then coming over to the meat counter and asking those questions. So it tells me that we're doing something right there, and we're trying to educate them, and they feel comfortable about, well, and we have handouts to say, this is how you cook a pot roast, or how you'll grill a brisket, smoke a brisket or grill a steak, and give them physically something to look at, a temperature chart to get the internal at 125 or whatever doneness they want, with a picture that shows the color of the product. And so it's we wanted to be an educational place, not just a butcher shop to run by and pick up something and run home and cook it. And it seems to be working so far.
So what, I guess, when you talk about educating your staff, where are the resources coming from? What are some of the courses maybe they're taking? Is A&M playing a role in that? Beef It's What's for Dinner, other meat cutting courses? I guess, where's the best place for you to train your team there at the meat board?
Well, so a lot of it, actually, we, like Don mentioned earlier, we do a lot of partnering with the Texas Cattle Raisers Association, and I look to them for individuals that are looking for a job after graduating from a meat science program somewhere. We also partner with the Culinary School of Fort Worth, where we do, and I actually just hired one on after he finished his externship. He knows cuts of meat. He knows how to create, and that's something that not necessarily lacking, but Zach brings a lot more to the table, having that culinary background.
Yeah, when you talk to a customer then about cooking a piece of product or a piece of meat, I should say, and introduce Zach, then he can go into, well, these are some of the sauces and the seasonings you can do, and it's really interesting because he can talk the culinary side. He's not an animal science graduate from A&M or Tech or Tarleton or whatever, but he's learned a lot about the meat side and since he's been with us. But he adds a lot to the preparation part, and that seems to be a kind of an all-in-one. When somebody walks up and we have one of our guys that's a meat scientist start talking about meat, and Zach walks up and talks about cooking, it's like, wow, this is not a bad a bad little program to have.
No, definitely. And Greg, did you want to add on to that?
Well, you know, bringing someone in from the culinary side of it, we do a lot of catering as well. And like Don mentioned, the cooking classes, and we're able to offer, obviously I know we're here to talk about beef, but we're able to offer a lot of things that complement, the beef. And, you know, having someone from the culinary school really just, it adds to what we can offer each customer.
Well, just like NCBA and beef, it's what's for dinner. You know, people come in and that's the first thing they do is come to the meat counter. Mm-hmm. And then they try to figure out what do they want to go with it. And because we primarily want to sell them beef, you know, and that's what we're after. But we felt like that if we offered something to complement that, it would work. And they could just go home and basically warm it up and cook it on the grill and they got dinner. So.
What is the growth? Because we can talk about pork and lamb here. I love lamb. Heck, every ranch in Montana, for the most part, was paid off by sheep back in the day. So we can talk about these other proteins that we work with out in the countryside. But, you know, well, are you seeing more of an increase for protein products like lamb with today's consumers? Maybe that the younger consumer audience? Or I guess what is that like, having all these cuts that traditionally make up the inventory at a butcher shop?
If you have a butcher shop, you've got to have all the different breeds or all the different products in there, like beef, lamb, pork, and veal. But beef is our primary concern, and then we offer veal and lamb because we do have those customers that come in and their husbands will want a ribeye and the wife might want a veal chop or something. So, we try to make the sources enough to where there's something that would invite them to come into the shop and see what we have. But our largest selling products are the beef products. And it's primarily prime tenderloin and prime ribeye is the two biggest items we sell. And then it graduates down from there. So it's not a thing that we're very competitive, but we're very cautious in the product we bring in, that it's got the right marbling. It is upper two-thirds choicer, it is prime, and the filet is and when we talk about aging at 3 weeks, that's we mean that, and we feel like there's a little slightly or difference in the flavor. So the beef part of it is kind of the selling point to bring people in, because we try to keep that case as red as we can when they walk in with all the different beef cuts, from not only ribeyes and filets, but Denver cuts and flat irons and pot roasts and whatever is seasonal or whatever not, or fresh ground beef, kind of focus that in on that part of it.
And obviously we're moving in here to the holiday season. We're amongst it. And, you know, a lot of families will be sitting down to prime ribs, I guess. And there's always more maybe of a demand. How do you, as a butcher shop, how do you prepare to get that inventory and to have these high quality cuts? What is that like, just preparing and making sure those beeves are ready to be aged and have a little more inventory on hand for the Christmas season or as well?
We do our best to make sure that we have a pre-order system set up and people utilize that. Now, obviously, we will have the walk-ins closer to the holidays, but we have a real good system for pre-ordering, and I have all that product locked up. We do everything from we'll do a smoke a whole tenderloin for you, we'll smoke a four-bone rib roast for you, or you can get the product raw and we can tell you how to do it.
I bet there's a lot of people that like that opportunity that maybe they don't have to cook it, because, you know, some people just should not be allowed to cook a good cut of meat. My mother and brother-in-law are two people that should not be able to you know, walk away from whether it be the grill or the oven or whatever, because I appreciate you doing that.
Yeah, this is a tough part of the year, because a huge part of our business is going to be over the next 3 to 4 weeks, four weeks, we'll say. And it started 4 weeks ago, getting prepared for this. So,
So when we're looking at that, what are some suggestions? Maybe folks are looking for more some affordable cuts, maybe not the actual prime rib. What are some of those cuts that your staff are working with people? Maybe it's somebody comes in and says, this is our budget. We got a lot of family coming over. I guess, what are some of those cuts that your team is working with your customers on, maybe on that affordable end of the range?
Well, that's where these other cuts that we have in the case that are like the Denver or the Flatiron or an outside skirt for fajitas or
a
bavette, that's correct, and fresh ground beef, and this time of year, a pot roast, a ribeye roll pot roast that fits perfectly into a crock pot that works real well. And so it's colder weather, and ground chili meat sells well. So you can tone the price down by that end, and some of those cuts we're seeing have increased because you're right. They not everybody can come in and buy a prime center cut tenderloin, you know, but we're trying to be diversified enough that we can offer them whatever they want there. And there's cuts today, like the Denver, like the Bavette, that back in my days, 50 years ago, 40 years ago, that was all product you either ground or you diced or you made into stew meat. Now they're attractive steaks that have been discovered by, you know, the NCBA and their group and that are a great grilling steak. And they're featured in some really fancy restaurants that years ago wouldn't have an idea what it was, you know. So it's helped our business there, if you know what I'm saying.
Now, I'm curious, because I've been down to Fort Worth several times over the years. Where are you guys located at there?
So we are, we're on Camp Bowie, which is one of the most historic streets in Fort Worth. We are basically on the corner of Ridgely Avenue and Camp Bowie, 6314 Camp Bowie Boulevard. It is one of the most affluent zip codes in the state of Texas.
So for your perspective as a business owner, a person that is providing good protein, beef protein to consumers, but also that educational component, why is this location so key to reach people, not only in this community, but and grabbing a bite to eat? How vital is that location in your eyes?
Well, where we're located is a little west of the Stockyards. It's a main feeder to downtown Fort Worth, Camp Bowie is. And so we're off that beaten path, but not far. But the area we're in is as Greg pointed out, is affluent and in this area. But we also have people that drive over to buy product. But we're not located in the Stockyards. We're back in a community area of Fort Worth, and it just seems to be where they can pull up and walk in and do it, be a one-stop shop, as I mentioned earlier. But
And so when we're looking at that opportunity, and what are some of the goals you have? You mentioned 2024 is going to be a big year. What are some of those goals? Unless it's a business plan, you don't want your competition to learn, of course. Well, what are some of those goals, education-wise, expanding protein demand in that region? What are some of the goals for the meat board?
Well, we've started putting out what we call a kiosk. Greg, you might want to talk about that.
Yeah, we have, it's basically a freezer case that, for example, there's a pretty large newer housing development west of Fort Worth. They have their own convenience store, gas station, schools. And so we have the meat board freezer case in their store that's loaded with fillets, ribeyes, strips, our sausages, our hot dogs, breakfast sausages, those type things. And we're expanding that as much as possible in 24. That seems to be a good avenue for us.
So what are some tips? Maybe I find that very interesting because obviously I come from a sparsely populated. We have over a million people. We just picked up a congressperson. A lot of people wish we didn't have as many people moving to Montana. But, you know, we do see a lot of collaborations with that direct-to-consumer model, but we do have some larger cities that do have the opportunity for some something like having a case of meat in a local grocery store. What has that been like working with local retailers that are also trying to sell a product as well? But what has that been like? I really find that aspect of marketing protein really interesting.
Well, I mean, we have, like anywhere, we have some really good competitors here. You know, Central Market's in town, you know, the Tom Thumbs and the Kroger's. But there's a very few really butcher shops in Fort Worth downtown area, whatever. So we just thought it was a good thing to where we could compete, but in a friendly way. And we've been able to do that and hold our head above water. We don't carry not a selection of produce or anything like that. It's a meat and potato store, you know, and we wanted to center around that. And then by branching out with these freezer cases in a very selected location and a very, really nice logo on the side of it, and the product is vacuum packed and like we put in our gift packs that go out for Christmas, it's real attractive. You can freeze it, keep it frozen for a length of time and slack it out and cook it, and it's as good as you would if you walked in my opinion, and bought a fresh steak. But it's getting, and it's not a walk-in freezer. It's a case like an ice cream case, if you will. But at least it gets our product out to where we're reaching people that sometimes don't know who we are, or secondly, they've heard about us and they can now just have it, get in a golf cart and drive down the street and buy a bag of ice and a ribeye and a filet and go back home. And it seems it's spreading our marketing, if you will, and that's, believe it or not, so it's kind of helping.
Now, Don, I'm really curious. You mentioned charcuterie boards at the beginning of the show here, I guess. How fast can you throw one of those charcuterie boards together in a pinch?
Well, to be honest with you, I can't spell it, let alone know what to do with it. But we have an incredible lady that's an artist that we started really a couple of years ago. She'd come in and make custom charcuterie boards for our customers, and she started her own business, and now she makes them for us, and she puts on a charcuterie class where we'll go out on the internet and say we're going to have a 12 people to come in our boardroom, and it's set up classroom style with an elevated stage with a camera and a cutting table or a table she can put it together. It's like a cooking show with a camera showing behind her on the back wall. A big TV that's again like you're watching a cooking class on TV, and they can see what her hands are doing, how she makes a rose out of a piece of salami. And in fact, I've watched that 10 times and I just finally eat it. I can't make one, so but she's an artist, and the ladies will sit around the table and they'll have a cutting mat and all the ingredients from salami, the cheeses, the grapes, whatever, in front of them, and a board, and she's up, and they go one by one all the way around, making it look like different, just incredible stuff. And then they get, obviously, take that home and the little cutting board and all that. But it's really been popular, and they pretty much sell out every time we want to put it on on the internet for us to have a class. And we work around this gal that's so talented, and but it just gives another aspect of we're not just a butcher shop. We're their wives can come in. It's amazing. You mentioned that from a marketing standpoint, because some guy comes in and buys a ribeye, and we get to talking about the charcuterie this and the classes that, and we say that we're going to put a class on and. Said, well, my wife would love that. I'm going to buy a ticket for her as a gift, you type thing. So it's created a little fun excitement, a little marketing excitement.
You know, in agriculture, and especially in livestock production, we really tout, you know, from pasture to plate for cattle producers to understand every aspect of the beef life cycle, from cow calf to stocker feeder to the processing end of it. And sometimes I think we overlook that getting to the plate aspect of it. Why is it important for all cattle producers along the entire supply chain just to know a little more about the end product, that beef, that the quality of it, the finishing of it, and then of course the display of it in a business like yours? What should ranch cattlemen do just to become better educated on that almost that final end, almost getting to the consumer, understanding the different cuts, all the work that goes into aging, and really on that butcher end of things. What should producers do, especially on that cow calf? And a lot of guys say, oh, they shipped off. They're not my, they worry anymore. I don't have to worry about them. They're somebody else's problem. Why should they really be seeking to better themselves as producers and following that product all the way to the consumer that way?
Well, you know, being in this business for many, many, many years and raising my own cattle and playing with genetics, and I always wanted to breed and raise something that I would want to eat and I'd be proud of if it was out in the industry. And it all starts with genetics. And I'm seeing already over the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years, the type of beef being raised is just genetically improved to just unbelievable. For instance, when I went to A&M in 60 and graduated in 69, the average, the industry average of prime beef being produced in this part of the world was about 2% or less than 2%. Today it's probably 8 or 9%, 10%. So that one statistic, that means then there's more choice. That's the upper end, very little select at the very bottom end, because it's people wanted to eat a better piece of meat. And like I say, NCBA has done a great job in promoting that, to let them know that you can go in and get a really good piece of meat and be selective about it. And so the ranchers need to select about it. I was a rancher, I know. And because I didn't want to raise, you know, select beef, because I knew if I could raise a better grade, these calves would sell a little more. But I always looked at it as there's like three or four spots that you can get off the bus. You can have a cow and have a calf, stop there. You can have the calf and wean it and put it on grass and get it to 700 or 800 pounds. You can stop there, or you can send it to a feedlot and follow it out and then run it through a packing facility at about 1300 or 1400 pounds, and you can follow it all the way through. But we were flattered that NCBA was asked us to be part of the ranch plate. Was it gate to plate?
Gate
that
to
they
plate.
Did where they interviewed a couple of ranchers, cow-calf operations, went to a feeding operation, then came to Fort Worth and set up in our shop. And it showed exactly the picture of you can raise it, you can feed it, and you can process it, but it's got to wind up in a counter where somebody comes in and buys it. And they're more, the consumer today wants to know more about the quality and how it was raised, basically, and the feeding of it, you know, and that's why we jump in there with it. As we told you earlier about the educational part, we like to teach it. And I can thank my partner, Nick Nicholson, for helping us with that, because he was a teacher at A&M. He taught microbiology. But anyway, but we wanted to be someone that could inform the people about the product. And
you know, a lot of the time, you know, we see a lot of misinformation in the news, on social media, about the impact that beef has on the environment, on the world, and we live it. We understand the role, the positive role that cattle production plays in creating a great protein out there for consumers to eat. We understand that. So a tip of the hat to all of you, and on the education aspect, from the meat science to how cattle are raised. But back to that consumer end, why is it important for producers to watch consumer trends, to listen to the questions that they're asking, and maybe understanding, trying to understand why consumers are asking the questions they are, or what the cuts that they prefer? I guess why is that interaction so important for producers to understand?
Well, that's where it starts, you know, and it should back up like that. The consumer is the one saying, "Hey, we want." You know, we don't mind paying a little more for higher quality beef, and that needs to get out there and back down the chain all the way to the cow, the pregnant cow, and the cow calf. And if you want a premium, I mean there's markets for all that out there, but the bigger, I guess, more profitable, the more rewarding are these ranchers that have unbelievable operations. And Greg and I, we've been on a few ranches around here, and and seen what they do, and it's you could just see how they all look like peas in the same pod, so to speak. And it's that wasn't that way when I was growing up. My dad didn't really, if it jumped the fence and got on our place, we, you know, we went ahead and took care of it. But no, I'm joking, of course. I'm seeing that is the trend, and you just got to figure out where how far you want to go as a rancher before you want to get off the bus and be rewarded for that. And whether it's all the way through the feedlot to the packer, and then the packer pays a premium for a better product. All those opportunities are out there, and we just need to work together as an industry to make it to where everybody is self-sufficient and everybody can make a profit, you know, and make a living.
And we have to make a profit, and that seems to be a big talking point at all the ag meetings here this fall, is how do we keep producers in business? How do we put profitability at the top of producers and consumers' minds out there? So I think you guys are doing a big part of that in helping educate consumers down there and providing producers. Excited to hear more about that collaboration with Texas producers and having that gate to plate aspect there for Lone Star producers. But gentlemen, I don't want to hold you up too much longer down there, but is there anything that I missed over that you just want to share with our listeners here today on the Cattleman's Call?
No, I think you've been able to put all this in perspective, really. It's exactly what you're saying as far as, you know, the end consumer is what we all have to think about, whether you're raising them or you're cutting them up and you're trying to sell them. It's the end consumer that you've got it's our job to make sure that we've got the best product in there and they'll come buy it and take it home and enjoy it. And we want to be competitive because we have to be. But we want that class of people coming into our shop to where it's no different than going anywhere else. But the beef industry has done a great job over the years of improving cattle genetics and on and on and on. And I could name you 10 people that we mirror or look at and go, wow, they're doing a super job. And it's on the live end or the processing end. And I've seen that improvement over the years because I started out in a packing house when I first got out of A&M. And so it's been a heck of an education for me, but a pleasant one. And that's why this butcher shop came to be, is we wanted to open something on a small scale that we'd be proud of and we could enjoy talking about. And, you know, we do it all from like I say, from prime and up to third choice and wet aging and dry aging and truly dry aging. We have a dry aging cabinet that will age it 5-6 weeks if we have to, whatever the customer wants, whatever flavor profile they want. And that's a fun thing. And we're not a chain, but we're enjoying educating the people here in Fort Worth for sure.
Greg, any last thoughts?
Well, I want to say thank you for inviting us on to do this and letting us get our story out there. I think there's great things to come in the future for this industry, and I look forward to it.
Well, again, Don Ray and Greg Kimmel, our guests today on Cattleman's Call. They, of course, are with the Meat Board. If you're down in the Fort Worth area, go check them out there. And, again, if you get a chance, check out the Cattleman and Cattleman segment. And, I mean, it is, I think Don described it very well. It is a high-end meat shop. When you walk in, you know there's quality, you know it's clean, hopefully I can make it down there sometime and check it out. I'd enjoy doing that. So, gentlemen, thanks for joining us here today.
Well, thank you for the interview. It's been very enjoyable. It's a great program.
Thank you, Lane.
All right, friends, check them out. It's the Meat Board there in Fort Worth. That will do it for today's Cattleman's Call. I'm Lane Nordland. Merry Christmas and happy holidays. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to NCBA's Cattleman's Call podcast with Lane Nordland. For more information, visit ncba.org and make sure to subscribe to the podcast today.